The Cap of J-Hood podcast is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Check out the ESPN Chicago Games, sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka at ESPNChicagoGames.com. Watch us compete against each other, share memories and laughs, all for charity. Tito's Handmade Vodka celebrates 25 years. Cheers to you, Chicago!
Chicago, this is your new morning routine. Cap and J-Hood. Follow Cap J Hood on Twitter and Instagram. Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago. Stream the show on the ESPN Chicago app on ESPN 1000. And now on FM at 100.3 HD2. Now, on Chicago's home for sports. David Kaplan and Jonathan Hood.
Good morning, everyone.
Woo! Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out, bring them out. Woo! Bring them out, 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 bring them out.
Okay, it's off to Big D. That's next. And the ESPN FPI, that's Football Power Index, gives the Cowboys an 85% chance of walking away victorious in this game. Welcome into the Cap J Hood Show on ESPN 1000. Shay is the EP. Charlie is at the controls. Connor is in for Hoodie, who's in the Indiana Dunes for a few days enjoying some R&R. Enjoy your time, big man. Connor, good morning. I'm Cap. How are you, pal?
All I've wanted in life is a 15% chance at anything. Go Bears, right?
About that. That's 15%. That's what they say the chance is, according to Aspen.
We're okay. Yeah, that whole Micah Parsons thing is a problem, Cap. It's a problem. He's very good at football. He goes everywhere. He does everything. That defense is absolutely – oh, God, it's just – oh, man.
Yeah, he's a pretty good player. Yep. And let's see, Larry Borm, concussion protocol, Cody Whitehair, IR, Lucas Patrick, IR. That's three of the five starters gone off the worst offensive line in the league, according to many.
Come on down, Sam Mustafa.
And he actually was their highest-rated pass protector last week after being benched. He got in after two series to the injury with Lucas Patrick, and all of a sudden – I'm looking at the PFF grades. Number one pass protection offensive lineman against the Patriots, Sam Mustafa.
Well, listen, you know me. I'm a big analytics guy. I enjoy the numbers. I like trying to apply the math and the science to the sports while I'm watching them. I get it. I'm a nerd. But some of that is some of that you got to watch on eye test, check it back with some of the numbers, maybe watch again. I don't know where you fall on the whole – you know, Pro Football Focus, pass. I know they do a ton of work, a ton of tape, and they're not just nerds taping up the glasses in the middle and then going in to watch football tape. They know what they're talking about. But the thing with offensive line play is that you never quite know the assignments that these guys have, and that makes it difficult to grade things out in a one-number assessment. And I've always – I don't know. It's just – I think I'd rather take some – better offensive linemen than Pro Football Focus's highest grade against guys like Micah Parsons. And they've got a dude. They've got guys out of nowhere with 5-6 sacks. So Dorrance Armstrong has 5 sacks this year. He's a fourth round pick in 2018, and you've never heard of him before, but he's got 5 sacks this season. I mean, this is a thing.
So you said you're an analytics guy.
Always have been.
Did I tell you I believe, as a former coach, I believe in looking at tendencies. If it tells me this, then I'm not going to dispute the data. I'm just not married to them like, and I'm not saying you are, but most of the analytics crew, sure, they are wedded to the data, period. Period. And that's when we just interviewed Joe Madden on the Cubs Talk podcast, and he just blasted that whole crew. He goes, I probably won't get another job again. Not going to be beholden to the analytics people. Not going to do it.
Well, I think that's kind of the matchup of data and coaching, right? I mean, whether it's baseball or whether it's, you know, football on the offensive line, right? Mm-hmm. If you're telling me that the best way to, I don't know, isolate Micah Parsons is like a pin and pull with the offensive line to try and get a run game going. But one of your offensive linemen, whether it's Mustafa or anybody else, can't get that block done against Micah Parsons, then it is not your best way to block Micah Parsons, right? I mean, I think that's fair. And that's the coaching and the analytics that kind of mirror or kind of match up with each other there. And I don't, you know, I don't know if you can run the same kind of stuff, like literally run the same kind of stuff that you had success in running Justin Fields against the Patriots last week. But you could certainly have that wrinkle in the game. The problem is that those guys on the other side, they've seen that tape now. They've got the ability to, I don't know, maybe spy that quarterback if they're into that whole thing. And that kind of negates some of the analytics, some of the, I don't know, some of the scouting reports that you might put out there otherwise.
I was talking to Curtis Granderson yesterday.
Oh, what a great guy.
I was doing some other stuff over at TV, and the analytics debate came up. And as someone very astute said to me, yeah, you could tell me that Connor McKnight, when this type of pitcher pitches, here's what he does on this thing, and you don't know if he had a fight with his wife that night. You don't know if he ate some oysters that don't agree. Like, the analytics can't tell you about the person. And that's my problem with being wedded totally to the data.
Well, and that's what's next, right? We're talking about measuring some of those biomechanics and putting that into the math, right?
Says the greatest untapped frontier is medical science, knowing.
Oh, yeah.
You see that Norling kid? The way he's built ain't gonna last.
Like, every morning when Shea checks in for work, he's got to mark down whether he had oysters last night or not, because that's going to affect his ability to produce the show.
Or,
and now the team has that data.
The two bear claws he walks in with every morning.
Oh,
that's not true.
Love a bear claw. Love a bear claw. Is an apple fritter the same as a bear claw? Is that the same in your world, or are those two different things?
That's two different things.
Two different things.
The apple fritter's more apple-y. The bear claw is more cinnamony.
Okay, so the bear claw, an apple fritter is a bear claw with the apple, plus apple.
Right, and we're going to get to football here in 3 seconds, Danny. Relax. I know he's in his car going, oh, the bits of Football Friday. I'm going to Wisconsin tonight, Connor, to your old area.
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow's the last day of the farmer's market. There is this lovely lady there. She is a school bus driver in Oshkosh. Actually, in Neenah, Wisconsin.
Sure.
She makes this cherry cream cheese coffee cake.
Dear God.
So I've been on this, you know, locked in nutrition thing. I'm almost 33 pounds down this morning, 32, whatever. It's just stupid. And I got it over the summer and I ate it. And I went, oh my God, this is better than sex. This is one of the greatest things I've ever had. It's incredible. So occasionally on a Saturday, my wife has surprised me and brought, it comes like, I won't call them individual, it's like a serving for two in a little like plastic container. I called the guy this week because he gave us his business card. I said, hey man, it's the last week. Are you and your wife going to be there with the coffee cakes? Nope, we're done for the year. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm coming back up there to do some stuff. Are you kidding? He's like, is this the bald-headed guy who's from Chicago? Yeah, that's me. Yes, I'm the one that keeps buying that stuff. He said, hang on a minute. Hey, honey, you know that guy that buys the cherry stuff? Yeah. Can you make a tray for him? I'll go meet him at the farmer's market. Absolutely. 10 of them. Made me 10 of them.
10? Good so God.
Told me to put them in double Ziplocs into the freezer. I'll have them through the winter.
See, there you go. You're just like a squirrel finding your sustenance.
I'm going to freaking crush it tomorrow morning.
Well, here's the connect between bear claws, apple fritters, and your cheesecake, cherry, coffee cake thing. I defy you to find a better way to make offensive linemen better than to pile that stuff down their throat for an entire week before you go play the Dallas Cowboys, right? I mean, that bulks up an offensive line that makes you better at pass blocking.
Right.
There you go. Done deal. We've solved the problem.
Done deal. All right, so how that leads into football. You're coming off, like, me eating the cherry cream cheese coffee cake tomorrow. Small, like one serving. Not going to kill me. It's delicious. I'm going to feel really good. Ah, man, this is awesome. that's how the Bears woke up on Tuesday. That felt really good. We just beat the crap out of the Patriots. Now we want to feel that again. We want to eat that cherry cream cheese coffee cake again Sunday in Dallas. This is a way, way tougher challenge. Much tougher to beat them there than it was at New England. Agreed?
Yeah, it is. I mean, this defense is a top three defense in football. You know, it's got pass rush. It's got a pretty good run protect. This is as big a challenge as it gets. And I think what I worry about most with this Bears team is the thing that I've worried about the entire time. It's how do you protect Justin Fields? And that's not just from an offensive line standpoint. It's from a receiver standpoint, too, because an open receiver is easier to throw to. You can throw to him quicker. That gets the ball out of your hand and hopefully Micah Parsons out of your chest, right? I mean, those are things that help keep guys upright and moving forward in a football game. Those are the things that I really worry about them being able to do against the Dallas Cowboys. I don't want to lose. I don't want to take two steps back after having taken one step forward against the Patriots. And I worry about those two steps coming back because that's how we see this league work more often than not.
So I look at Justin, and is he going to be able to run these quarterback designed runs the way he did the other night? I don't think he can have as much success because it's a better defensive team in Dallas than it was in New England. And you don't have the element of surprise. Fair enough?
Yeah, I think so. I think what'll be interesting to watch from a scheme standpoint, though, you know, we had, what was it, probably like 10 design quarterback runs, I think. You know, depending on where you look, you can see some different numbers on 10. Some have 11, some have 12. There's a couple of those runs. I was just watching some of it, some of the offensive highlights the other day, where Justin's reading the offense, the defensive lineman. You know, whether it's the end or the linebacker, and trying to check and see, you know, is he coming? Is he going in with the running back? Can I pop this outside? It almost looks like they're setting up some zone read stuff. I'd be interested to see if, you know, some of the design, you know, not the quarterback sweep thing that you had on that, what it was, a third and five that he picked up. I'd be interested to see if the next wrinkle isn't a little bit more zone read that allows them to kind of just put the ball in the running back's hand once or twice, give them that same look. Provide a little bit more run because listen, you're not throwing the ball against the Cowboys. I just don't think that that's going to be a thing where you can go, you know, early in sets and attack them downfield. You're asking to get set behind schedule and face second and long, third and long with the way they pass rush. You know,
yeah, I'm excited for this game simply because it's a step up in class and we feel good after the Patriots game. Now, be careful what you wish for. We'll get into this. So what's the most important thing to see from the Bears this weekend in Dallas? We want your thoughts. Phone lines are open. He's Connor in for Hoodie, who's in the Indiana Dunes for a few days. Enjoy your anniversary. I'm Cap. This is ESPN 1000.
Cap. J-Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
ESPN 1000. Hope you're starting your mornings with us. Hope your coffee is hot, ready to roll. I fired up my Keurig this morning. Got a nice cup of coffee. I'm ready to go. Connor McKnight is with me in for Hoodie. What's the most important thing to see from the Bears this weekend in Dallas? We want your thoughts. Phone lines open at 312-332-3776. Are you actually excited for noon Sunday because you think the Bears can win? FPI, that's Football Power Index. What was it, Shea, 85%?
Yeah, last I saw, I think it was like 84.7, so round up 85.
85% chance that Dallas notches a victory. I'm excited to watch the game because what we do, I love watching the Bears every Sunday or whenever they play. I just don't want to see all the goodwill they engendered on Monday night, Connor, get brushed aside. That's my biggest fear that, oh boy, now they got speed on the edges. We can't get Justin on the design runs as successfully, and now he gets sacked six or seven times.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a leap forward against the Patriots, right? And I think the most important thing that I want to see is something that we also saw in the Patriots game, but not the design run, not that kind of stuff. Remember, the second quarter for Justin Fields, for the offense, was bad, right? I mean, I think there was a fumble that he got back. There was an incompletion or two. There's a lot of offensive drive. That whole second quarter was just – it wasn't good. And then they bounced right back. Third quarter, fourth quarter. I mean, it was all there. It was all – they rebounded. Justin specifically rebounded from not being able to get done what they were asking him to get done. That's what I've wanted to see most from Fields and the rest of the offense. So regardless, I guess, of how ugly things may get against Dallas, even though Michael Parsons was limited in practice yesterday, I think he's probably going to play. I want to see them be able to bounce back. I want to see Justin be able to bounce back from a tough, you know, set of downs, from a tough quarter, from things that may happen against the Dallas defense. That's just, it's probably going to outclass this offensive line and this receiving core, right? I think that's fair to ask for. And I think that's probably the most important thing for Fields' development that you can actually get out of this particular game.
Yeah, our friend Bearlissimo on Twitter says, keeping Justin healthy, competing in every phase on every down. We do that and we will be just fine. It's just, the Bears are radically out-talented by this team. I mean, that's just a fact. Their offensive line, light years better than ours. Their wide receiver room, light years better than ours. Their pass rush, especially with Quinn now, he plays for Philadelphia now, radically better than ours. Is Justin Fields, when he becomes his best, better than Dak Prescott, as good as Dak Prescott, or he's not as good?
You hope better, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that the whole thing? You hope better than Dak Prescott?
I mean, Dak's a pretty good player now.
That's true. He's been hurt a lot. They've changed. I don't know if you noticed, Cap. I mean, obviously, last week was his first game back against the Lions since that injury.
Yep.
That offense, and I kind of like, I don't know, I kind of like the offensive coordinator. I kind of like what they've been able to do with some things. They were under center with Dak 57.6% of the time. They threw out of play action 52% of the time. They did a lot more offensively the kind of stuff that they'd done with Cooper Rush. Some, you know, quote unquote, easier things than sitting Dak in the shotgun and asking him to pick things apart and stare down the whole thing. You know, they were under center a lot, and he saw success there. He was 11 of 13 with 121 yards on play action. That's pretty good. I think you could expect a lot more of that from Dak, and I think, honestly, I think that kind of stuff for Prescott seems to be the kind of stuff that makes him even better and gets him toward whatever ceiling he's got.
I'm looking at Dak's career numbers.
Right.
Okay. This year we throw out because he's only played two games. But last year they went 11-5. Dak threw for 4,449 yards, 37 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. By a mile, that is better than any Bears quarterback in the history of the franchise. We've never had a 4,000 yard passer. The year before that, Dak got injured. He only played five games. The year before that, 2019, Dak threw for 4,902 yards, 30 TDs to 5 interceptions.
Yeah, but what's the conversation around Dak always been?
30 to 11. Yeah.
What's the conversation around Dak always been? You know, and what's the conversation around the Cowboys been since I was a kid? When big moments happen for Dallas, they're not very good. You know, since that run in the 90s, since I was staying up late watching Emmitt Smith win Super Bowls, they've not been really good when pressure comes around, when big moments come around, and Dak's been part of that as well. Tony Romo's been part of that. Mike McCarthy's been part of that in times in his NFL career, right?
Yeah.
I don't think the Bears offer them a whole lot of big moments come Sunday, but I think it's fair if you're asking, like, Justin or Dak, who's got the higher ceiling in the NFL, I think that matters.
Shay, how would you answer that? Who's got the higher ceiling, Justin or Dak? Or are they very similar?
Right now or long term?
Well, got to be long term, right? Fields. Yeah, got to be long term.
Fields.
Has a higher ceiling.
Yeah. I think we've seen Dak's ceiling.
Almost 5,000 yards.
Yeah, but you got to like contextualize some of the stuff that they do. And he was in an offense that was so lethal on the ground with the threat of Zeke Elliott, with the offensive line that he had. I mean, he had multiple all-pros on his offensive line. I think if you get Fields in a situation that's as advantageous as the situations Dak's been in, Fields is the more talented player.
I'm not sure that's an accurate statement. Dak Prescott.
Weapons matter, though. Weapons matter. Weapons matter. And even in Dallas, they would tell you they're probably a wide receiver short of being an elite offense at this point. They got rid of Amari Cooper and are kind of looking for that, you know, somebody to step up and play that way.
And Michael Gallup, there are two pretty good players along with Dalton Schultz.
They're I think a lot of people would say that wide receiver room is fine. Noah Brown's played fairly well. He's been okay. He made some big plays for them against the Lions, but it's the Lions. Weapons matter in the NFL, and in the NFL, when you're talking about weapons, I think that includes your offensive line. I think that includes your offensive line, given the fact that the quarterback's the most important thing in the world.
Right. Like, if you ask me in a vacuum, would I rather have Dak or Justin Fields and throw out what's surrounding them? I would rather have Justin Fields. I think he offers more dynamic play styles in the way that he's able to run the ball along with his arm talent on deep balls. The throwing out the weapons, I would rather have Fields if I can build a team from scratch around a quarterback.
I mean, I hope that's the case. That's our quarterback, yeah. And I'm a Bears guy. But Dak Prescott has multiple 4,000-plus yard seasons with high touchdown, low interception numbers. He's a really, I know I've been guilty of underestimating how talented that guy is.
That's fair. I think I have. I think the Dallas Cowboys quarterback is always the guy the rest of the nation loves to underrate, you know, because mm-hmm. it's America's team and this whole thing. Like, how many years did people just draft Tony Romo in fantasy leagues and say, oh, I've got a lot of points, but, you know, I don't have to worry about the playoffs or anything. So all of Romo's interceptions or fumbling of extra points or whatever, I don't have to worry about any of those things. I think, though, what's really clear, I think the three of us agree on this part. Wouldn't you have loved for Justin Fields to have that Dak's offensive line to learn and grow behind for the first 2-3 years of his NFL career? Wouldn't you have just loved that for your guy? Yeah. I certainly would have.
Drop Larry Allen out there. Let's go to the phones. Tommy.
Hell yes.
Tommy in Oswego. Hey, Tommy, what's up, man?
What's going on? Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
So a couple of things I want to see this weekend against the Dallas Cowboys. The one thing that I've noticed about the Cowboys defense, as good as they are, is that they do seem to over-pursue quite a bit. So I was thinking, you know, you guys brought up the zone read a little while ago. Khalil Herbert with that one cut, I think, would be just perfect for that. If you can get a one-cut offense, kind of a running game going against this Cowboys defense, I think it would really, really help what they're over-pursuing. Also, let me get some Nikhil Harry in the red zone. You know, you got a big body wide receiver. That's something that the Bears don't have right now. If you really don't have a red zone threat, let's throw the ball up there and, you know, give him a couple of jump balls, see what he can do with those. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm not convinced, and appreciate the call, Tommy and Oswego. I'm not convinced Nikhil Harry is, you know, all that. There's a reason that he failed in New England, but I'm all for giving him another chance. I don't know if he's a jump ball guy or not. I guess give him a chance. I want to see us be able to give Justin a chance to get out on the edge and make plays.
Does that mean just with his legs to you?
No. That means play action. If you can just establish some of the run, because you don't want to end up in 3rd and 11 and allow Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence to pin their ears back and just go, obvious passing down, here we go. Because then we're in trouble.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like moving the launch point for Justin. I like also moving the launch point has got to be one of the best new football phrases in the last 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, were you Cap, you weren't sitting there on television or on the radio show 15 years ago saying the phrase "move the launch point," were you?
No, I was not.
What a ridiculous thing. What move the launch point? Get him out of the pocket. Like, why are we changing the way we're it doesn't matter. It's just a weird English major thing. I like the idea of getting him outside. I like the idea of cutting the field in half if you absolutely have to against this team. I thought Justin made some really big strides last week in making full field reads. You know, 1, 2, 3, then make that decision or pull it down and run or what have you. That's huge. And I think that's going to get him to a lot of places. I think that gets a lot of quarterbacks to elite levels of play, but probably not against this defense, probably not this Sunday, and probably not with the offensive line as banged up and bad as it has been.
All right, how can the Bears continue to build on what happened in New England on Monday? How can we do that against Dallas? Or are you really concerned about this game? Where are you? 312-332-3776. He's Connor. I'm Cap. Be right back.
David Kaplan. Jonathan Hood. Welcome, fans. This is Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and streaming on the new ESPN Chicago app.
Football Friday here on ESPN 1000. Shot or no shot comes your way at 8. We'll get the latest from Courtney Cronin after the Bears had the coordinators meet the media yesterday. But how can the Bears continue to build on what happened last Monday in New England? We would love your thoughts. 312-332-3776. Yesterday, Luke Getsy spoke, the offensive coordinator. Hey, Luke, what's the most satisfying part of scoring 33 points?
It was more about the way that we did it, more than necessarily, you know, getting 33 points or whatever. I thought, you know, it was probably our most physical game that our guys played. You know, we had guys go down kind of in and out of the game, and so other guys had to step in a bunch of different reps, and there was no blink, and the guys were prepared to play. So I thought that was really a really cool part about that whole day was the play style, the physicality of it. And then when you needed guys to step in and play, they were ready to rock and roll.
How about the run game? How much did you install on the mini bye week?
We've been doing it all year. I think what we do with our entire offense is we try to get the premier play against the defense. And so, they presented some cool opportunities for us that we were able to kind of get better angles and stuff with the quarterback run this past week. So we wanted to make sure we took advantage of it. It didn't hurt that we had an extra day, but as far as like necessarily creating a new offense, and then, no, we didn't do anything differently that from that perspective, and we went about it the way we kind of always do in our game plan part of it, and what gives us the best opportunity, what gives all 11 guys the best opportunity to succeed. So when
you hear that they put all, he said we've been actually trying to do this. So what changed, Connor?
What changed from what? 1 week to the next?
Yeah, how much of the run game was installed during the mini bye week? His response was, well, we've actually been doing some of this. We haven't seen it.
He kind of mentioned that there's one, I think it's in a different cut, but there's one play that they lifted from the Ravens that they saw them run against the Patriots in the week prior, right? I mean, he kind of talks about that a little bit, and that's, you know, it's fine. I think you can credit the mini bye, right? The 10 or 11 days, depending on how you want to count it and how much time you're spending in the office. I think you can credit that with his coaching staff changing quite a bit. That's what you and I were talking about a lot on Wednesday's show, right? The idea that you can take stock of what you've done, the personnel that you've got, the matchups that you're going to get, admit what wasn't working, try and change into some things that you think could work. I really like the idea of this coaching staff with not a lot to prove other than their own ability to change, have changed, that they've adapted. I think that's really important. I think that's the biggest thing that changed from week to week. They've had They had time. This is a first year coaching staff for the most part. Like top to bottom, these guys are all in jobs that they haven't had before. And when you finally get time to reevaluate and adapt to what you've been doing, you damn well better do it, right? And they were able to. That's what this league is really about from a coaching standpoint, my opinion.
I guess my takeaway this morning, this first 40 minutes of our show, that people actually think Justin's got more upside than Dak Prescott, who is 54-33 as a starter in his career, has put up records of 13-3, 9-7, 10-6, 8-8, 2-3. He only played 5 games in the 2020 season. He was injured. 11-5, and he's 1-1 this year on a pretty talented team.
That's Kirk Cousins stuff. I mean, and when you think about the expectations that these Cowboys teams
have, Kirk Cousins, no,
I'm not disagreeing. But when you think about the expectations these Cowboys teams have had every season, the record, the overall record that you gave there, what was that, 54-35?
54-33.
That's not overly impressive.
And every single year he is completing 68% of his passes, 63, 68, 65, 69 this year. We don't know yet. He's only played 2 games. 61 so far. Touchdowns. I mean, this guy's putting up touchdown numbers, low interception numbers. He's a damn good quarterback. If you tell me I can have Justin be him right now, I'll take it. It's amazing to me in this city, this dead-ass quarterback city that hasn't had a good one since Sid freaking Luckman. And our guy will be better than that.
I would take Dak Prescott, too, but I would hope that Fields is ultimately better than that.
Cowboys fans, some of them can't stand Dak Prescott. Listen to how they talk about that guy and how they talk about this team and how they talk about McCarthy.
Like, I think they talk more about McCarthy and the team, not Dak.
I disagree. I disagree. I think Dak is – the quarterback is always a topic of conversation, especially in that town. And there is – you know, whether it was Jason Garrett before this, and yeah, Dak before this too. Hell, there were shots taken at Romo before. I mean, no one is ever satisfied with their quarterback when you're not winning playoff games. And there's going to be a conversation about whether that quarterback, regular season success, you know, be damned, whether he can win a playoff game. And the Dallas Cowboys have not had a lot of playoff wins since I was in middle school. Yeah, it's just it hasn't been there for them. So you start to ask, and this is the question that I think Kirk Cousins has had asked of him. Okay, you've got good compiling stats. You're fair one Pierre in this league, but when it matters, can you put it up? And I don't know that a lot of those guys have. I mean, that separates like quarterback strata, right? The tiers here. Mm-hmm. Sure, he could be a finish the year as a top 6. Top 10 quarterback, but do you win playoff games? That's all guys care about. That's all we talk about at the end.
Is Dak Prescott a top 10 quarterback in the NFL?
Let's go through the list, right? I mean, he's not top 4, right?
Okay, number 1, I'm looking at the rankings preseason because, you know, to rank this year, they're already using this year's stats, and he's been out with injury.
They have
Josh Allen, number 1. They have Patrick Mahomes, 2. Aaron Rodgers, 3. This is preseason again. Tom Brady, 4. Now he slipped. Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, Dak Prescott. That puts him ahead of Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, Matthew Stafford, Deshaun Watson, Derek Carr, Kyler Murray, Kirk Cousins, Jalen Hurts, Trey Lance, Matt Ryan, Jameis Winston, on and on.
Yeah, and, like, I don't, you know, once you get through 5 or 6 of those names, there's 8 or 9, 9 or 10 that all kind of feel like the same quarterback, that all kind of feel like the same roll of the dice to get hot and win a playoff game, to get hot and go for a Super Bowl, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I hope Justin's as good as Dak has been. Let's go to the phones. Keith's in Downers Grove. Hey, Keith, what's up, man?
Hey, Cap. Hey, man, I got a bone to pick at your first time calling, man, from Downers Grove. I got a problem, man.
Yep.
I just got one ball, right?
Wait a minute, you're breaking up. Say it again.
Please.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm gonna assume yes. For you to tell the public that you actually think that Dak Prescott is going to be a better quarterback based off what you saw in the last couple of years than Justin Fields.
I can't hear you, Keith. Keith, you're breaking up. Call us back. Can't hear him. Let's go to Eddie on the north side. Eddie!
Hey, boys. Hey, what about the Giants quarterback, Daniel Jones? I mean, he looks pretty impressive to me. Look at these receivers he's throwing to. Fourth round, 300-something pick, second round. And now they look like stars, these receivers, because one thing he's doing, he's getting them the ball. If the quarterbacks get these wide receivers the ball, they look like stars. I mean, it's pretty impressive to me. I don't know what you guys think about the guy, but I knew another guy that looked like that and got the team two Super Bowls, which was Eli Manning, and he actually looks better than him.
Yeah, and if I said, and we appreciate the call, Eddie. Have a great weekend. If I said to you, Justin Fields will be as good as Eli Manning, you taking that?
Oh God, absolutely! Are you kidding me? Two Super Bowls. Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer.
I don't. Let's
slow down
the brakes
a
little
there,
bit.
But
I
would.
Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer.
I would take.
Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer. Why is that? Why is that? Why does that hurt? Why does that hurt, and who does that hurt? Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer.
If you told me Dak has Eli's career, I would take it. If you told me that's the ceiling, or Dak Fields has Eli's career, I'd take that. If you told me that's the ceiling of his talent, I'd be a little disappointed.
Okay, let me ask you a question. He's played...
Who?
Eli played, started. He never came in relief. He started 117 games, okay? Excuse me, started 234 games. What's his record? 234 games, what is his record?
Why do I care about a quarterback's record?
Because he has the ball in his hands the most of the time.
No,
he has a huge impact on wins.
Tell me who won Super Bowls. Tell me who won playoff games. Why do I care? Who in their right mind is going to look at Justin Fields' record after the first 2 years of his career and say any of that is on Justin Fields?
I'm not saying. I'm talking about for a body of work over how many seasons did he play? Let's take our break
care.
And we'll come back. I got other numbers for him as well. Not just
I would
wins.
Love to hear them because the first one doesn't matter.
I'm not sure you're right there. We'll get your thoughts as well. 312-332-3776.
Cap J Hood.
Follow on Instagram at Cap J Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Show. We thank you for your support. So many of you tweet at us and email us and enjoy the show. We really appreciate it. Hoodie's on vacay for a few days. Got an anniversary coming up next week with his lovely wife. So they're in the Indiana Dunes for a few days, just relaxing. So enjoy it, my friend. Connor McKnight is in for Hoodie. Shay's the executive producer and the friendly voice you will get if you call 312-332-3776, Charlie Bevins is at the controls. Okay, we were talking about Justin Fields versus Dak Prescott versus Eli Manning. You believe Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer, and I am dumbfounded why.
I feel like we've been doing this in sports talk radio since Eli Manning retired. He's got two Super Bowls. Eli Manning, M-A-N-N-I-N-G, whose father was Archie Manning, whose brother is Peyton Manning, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He is going to be
he doesn't a deserve
Hall
it. He's not a Hall of Fame player.
If
his name was Eli McKnight, he's not going.
First of all, if his name was Eli McKnight, he would be a huge dork. Listen, the guy is going to be he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Why?
A Hall of Famer.
He led the league three times. In interceptions thrown, five double-digit win seasons in 16 years. 63%.
Joe Namath has more interceptions than touchdowns, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
63% completion percentage is considered, eh. He never, ever completed 63% of his passes, ever.
I don't understand. Connor, look at the guys that are in the Hall of Fame. They all have knocks on them like this.
Connor, there are 27 quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame since World War II. That's it. You're telling me the 28th guy going in is
Namath? Is Namath one of them?
I have to look at the list. I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Of course he is.
First of all, the game was different way back when. He probably got in for being a pioneer from the AFL.
Is that not how people get in? Eli Manning is going to be a Hall of Famer.
Does Eli Manning deserve to be a Hall of Famer?
You can call me when he... That's not the first question you ask, and that's hardly the question that matters. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. Shoot me a text when he puts that gold jacket on. It's going to happen.
Gold jacket, green jacket. Who
gives a...
But yeah, he does not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. That's a fact.
We don't get to make that call. He absolutely meets the criteria of Hall of Famers. The guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
And I'm just dumbfounded by some of these callers, but let's get to them because we love them. Sean in Bartlett. Hey, Sean.
What's going on, Cup?
Hey. What's up, Sparky?
Okay, listen to me. He is sixth in attempts, seventh in completions, seventh in yards, seventh in touchdown passes, 19th. Or ninth in passing yards all time. He's a two-time Super Bowl winner, and he's a Manning. There's no doubt he's in the Hall of Fame. What are you talking about, Cap?
I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I'm not telling
you
that.
You're wrong. What are you watching?
I didn't think Harold Baines was a Hall of Famer either. He got in. Doesn't mean he's a Hall of Famer.
Hey, Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. He beat the best coach twice. The best coach of all time twice. He outdid them twice.
Yeah, Nick Foles beat him too. It doesn't matter.
Okay. But Eli did it twice against the same type of defense, the best defense probably ever. And Peyton Manning led the league in interceptions 1 year, too. What are you talking about?
I disagree. I'm not telling you he might not sneak his way in, but if his name was Eli Sean, he's not getting in.
Of course he is, because he's got two Super Bowls and all these stats. He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, I don't like to do personally, but I think that he's a Hall of Famer. There's no way that you can't say that he's not a Hall of Famer.
All right. You're entitled to your opinion.
I'm just glad we've gotten rid of the quarterback win number. I'm glad we're not there anymore. We've moved on, and that's
right. You're the same guy. Wins don't matter for pitchers in Major League Baseball. That said, by pitchers who just can't pile them up, and somehow, some way, Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander and Clayton Kershaw, all these dudes that are really freaking good. Just pile up wins, and the guys that just, for some reason, Jose Quintana, don't win games, well, you don't understand their XFIP and their BABIP numbers are really, I don't care. Did you win or lose?
I mean, you just explained it for me. I don't have to do any more work. The win isn't really an impactful stat anymore. It's just not.
I understand that, and batting average doesn't matter because this number is so much better, and his weighted runs created plus is this. Yeah, said by guys who are hitting 221. It's just a fact. A fact. I understand all the analytic numbers and how we evaluate guys, but I find it funny. The truly great ones, they stand up under any measure. Any.
But that's not true, right? Like, Burt Blyleven took how long to get into the Hall of Fame because he didn't have pitching wins. And now we all look at Burt Blyleven's career and go, well, that guy should have been in the Hall of Fame for decades. Jack Morris, the guy. Who stands on wins,
yeah,
right?
I love,
the guy
who had postseason
success. Right, and he wasn't in because why?
I don't know.
But I think probably the pitching win had something to do with it. Some other stats not being there for him, too. He got to stand on wins and got himself into the Hall of Fame.
And won 287 games.
Yeah, I understand that.
That's a lot
of
wins.
Look at the rest. Right, Sabermetrics got him into the Hall of Fame. The same way that Sabermetrics got Tim Raines into the Hall of Fame. You look at the overall stats, the actual impact that the guy made. Burt Blyleven wasn't in the Hall of Fame for at least 7 years because he didn't have 300 wins and he only had 282 wins. And
everybody said, "Well,
fine, 287. He didn't have 300 wins. It's nonsense. Setting these artificial these ceilings on win totals.
We agree on that. That we agree.
It's absolute nonsense.
So I'm amazed there are people on Twitter. We've had a couple callers that called in, couldn't hold, said, oh, Justin's better than Dak. Excuse me? I hope he is. He's not today. And if he puts up Dak Prescott-like numbers, one season he becomes the greatest quarterback in the history of our franchise. That's a fact. All right, we got to get the shot, no shot. We'll get into more Bears and Dallas discussion. How can the Bears continue to build on what happened in New England this weekend? Shot or no shots in 2 minutes.